It's more than just an interview. It's a dive into the mind.
Fear of failure was a motivation to, you know, I've got to do the best I can to get some runs here.
I had certain mantras and certain visualizations that I would do during my races.
For me, this was like that song that connected with people without any like marketing, any hype, any money thrown behind it, on just a very pure level.
Confidence has probably always been my hardest battle, to be honest.
It took me a number of years. I was lost. I didn't know what to do. I couldn't do anything. Couldn't get a job. I didn't have a career.
I could not be competitive with my older sister in everything that we did.
Just the confidence levels were so high, and it just shows like how big a thing confidence can be.
Welcome to this episode of A Dive Into the Mind, where we step away from sport and into the world of construction management. We chat to Steve Wharton, the CEO of Premier Cranes, and a man who has demonstrated a want to develop and a work ethic that is second to none. We talk about his journey into the construction industry and explore his thoughts about leadership and development. Steve has some excellent insights, and we really hope that you take something out of this conversation. But first, a shout out to our sponsor, Kinetic Media. Chris Kelly, Managing Director of Kinetic Media, is responsible for putting together all our podcast graphics, and we're so thankful to have him involved in our project. But Kinetic Media offers more than tailored graphic design solutions. From global companies to startups and side hustles, Kinetic Media have been helping brands connect with their market for nearly 10 years. Websites, logos, digital and print, Kinetic offer the full range of design solutions and media services. So visit kineticmedia.co and get in touch with Chris and the team. You won't be disappointed. Well, welcome, and looking forward to telling your story, Steve, of your personal and professional growth. But a bit of background, I suppose. We've known each other for quite a long time. Best mates with your brother, who's MIA most of the time these days. But how are you going?
Yeah, I'm going good. Going good.
Excellent. Thanks for joining us. And I suppose at the moment your current role is Chief Executive Officer of Premier Cranes, which is a company based in Melbourne. Give us a bit of background on Premier Cranes. Like at the moment, how many staff does Premier Cranes employ, for example?
Premier's got about 70-odd guys in the field and probably pushing 30 in the office. So now we've got a fair bit going on around the trap. So, yeah.
Number of cranes or those, you know, logistical resources, what do you estimate you've got in play now?
Yeah, we're running 20-odd cranes, and there's all the trucks and everything that come along with that. So there's always new ones venturing in and that as well. So, no.
And can you give us an example of some of the major projects or the projects that you're involved in at the moment?
Yeah, so we kick around all around Melbourne, but essentially we've got the Westgate Tunnel project, which takes a lot of our time. So that takes on about probably 50-odd% of our work. So that's a big infrastructure project that's led by the state government, blah, blah, blah. So that's a good one. There's heaps of work to go still on that one. It's not without its issues. They've had, you know, soil issues because of the contaminated soil and the like, but we've kicked along right on that one. Apart from that, we've got the Chisholm Prison we're kicking on. Sorry, doing a lot of lifting on precast panels and all those sort of things on that. And then, we find our way around Melbourne all day, every day, plus at night. Yep. So all good.
That's huge. There's some major projects there, aren't there? Which is crazy when you think about it, because I mean, you're just a kid that grew up in tiny Lake Bolac. Population of what? About 100? I don't know. What's the population there?
I reckon we had 130, 140 in our school from P to 12. So that was it, and that was for the whole community.
Yeah.
Plus every surrounding town. So add a few parents into that. Yeah, we're probably pushing 500 in the district maximum. So,
So what were your personal aspirations then as a child and going into your adolescent years?
Ooh. Personal aspirations. Well, I always like to prove my way forward, and I guess work was always, whether it was cleaning up horse poo in the paddocks or following a farmer around, we always found something to do and getting $2.50 an hour or whatever. So as far as aspirations go, I was happy to be in front of it and get amongst it most of the time. The local cafe, I worked as a bit of a chicken stuffer back in the day, cooking chickens and, yep. and deep frying whatever and stealing food out of the Bain Marie. So aspirations, oh, I don't know. A bit lost back then, I guess.
Yeah, it's a hard one, isn't it? It's a hard one to answer sometimes. Like, you know, and were you an academic kid?
No, oh, definitely not. No, definitely a late bloomer in that front. Mum and I joke and talk about that I was one of the younger kids in my class, you know, in my year. Yep. And for that, always felt a little bit behind the eight ball. So no, definitely not academic as far as that goes, but, I did get there eventually. I reckon I've got my head around it now, but it's taken, what am I, 38? Yeah. So getting there now.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if you think about academia and what you're doing now, like there's, you know, a significant amount of brain power being used on a daily basis, you know, problem solving and report writing and, you know, quotations and all that sort of jazz, which, I mean, if you think about when you're 15 or 16, could you even comprehend the ability to do that now?
Well, what was business? I had no idea what business was. So in that context, it's like, oof, righto.
And yeah.
No, to your point, absolutely, absolutely. So I often say squeeze the brain, and that's all you got to do is just Google's my friend and squeeze the brain. So
yeah, look, it does help.
Make it, all that sort of stuff. There's plenty of analogies that can be used.
Absolutely. So at the end of year 12 then, what did you do professionally or, you know, work-wise?
Finished year 12, got a substandard enter score. Fun and games, moseyed into Ballarat and then got accepted into an IT degree. I like computers, so you talked about aspirations before. I thought, oh yeah, I like computers, that'll do. So went to uni, lasted a semester if that. So from there, work was I think just anything that I could get my hands on, and ended up in a data center in Ballarat doing Telstra pit pipe and cable type work. I got around for the first few years.
and I mean, so, you know, a bit of a nomad in terms of career pathway. Like, I guess it sounds like you were sort of jumping into jobs that you could get at the time and that kind of gave you a wage. So tell us about your evolution then and, the catalyst that got you involved in Premier Cranes.
Yeah, well, I guess everything happens for a reason. So kicking around Ballarat, a little bit nomadish. Met people along the way, and the data center in Ballarat that we worked at, that was a pretty good little culture we had kicking along there. And so whether I was on afternoon shift or day shift, the people there were pretty good. So created a bit of a network there of workmates. One of them ended up coaching me out to Warburg to play footy out there. So country footy again, so a lot of country people. So met a lot of people out there, and from that met Matt Clark and the Clark boys, and ended up from as a natural progression, I guess, kicking around Ballarat and then heading into Melbourne. So Melbourne was a step up as far as it was the same type of work that I was doing in Ballarat, doing Telstra mm-hmm. project management, I guess you'd call it. And we were doing a lot of pit pipe and cable for Victoria, Tasmania, and I ended up scoring a job with ABB, which were one of the main contracting companies. And from that sort of just progressed into that realm, started to work through that. And that was probably the first time I actually committed to a job, so to speak, and actually put my back into it. Yep. And from that, I started to get recognized. I was going through some records the other day, cleaning out some folders after we'd moved, and I had my my monthly pay slip that was with an annual salary of $45,000 and I was a team leader of this. I thought, oof, you know, like the money changes quick in the world. And and back then I didn't think I was earning good money, but getting paid monthly and on that sort of wage is there was only one good day a month. And the first 2 weeks were good and the last two were terrible. So, absolutely. So from that, I progressed through ABB, and ABB were quite good to me. They didn't pay me well, but I definitely took that as a bit of a sacrifice to get to where I wanted to go, whether it was my social life or it was the learnings that I was getting out of being there. And I had a couple of good mentors there, and they got me on the path as far as those types of things go. But then from that, the GFC come in, and the world turned upside down from a business point of view. And ABB they're a global company, and got made redundant and found myself back at square one again. So living with Matty Clark and those sort of guys at that stage, and he was kicking around the cranes, and he just got a crane. And from that, he, you know, sort of encouraged me to go get my tickets and try something new and just get on the tools. Being from the country, wasn't shy of tools, so to speak. So I was happy to get out of the office and try something new. So ventured down that path, and from there, where do I start? Where do I end? It's plenty of moments.
It's an interesting. It's almost sort of like an auspicious sort of start where, you know, you probably couldn't see even yourself the growth that was going to take place from those moments. But it sounded like you did a bit of growing before you got there, and then you got your hands dirty. And then what was it to go from then being on the tools and being, I guess, a rigger or whatever, to then going, I want to be a part of this in terms of ownership and management?
Yeah, well, good one. The ABB were good again, and they put me through some, I guess, frontline management courses. They also put me through a degree in business administration. So I hadn't quite finished that when I was made redundant, but it definitely got me on the path of thinking that way. So it was, you know, whether it was the idea of business was really starting to solidify in my mind, and then being able to apply those sort of principles in a smaller business was really starting to, ooh, hang on, this plus this plus this, and we could do that. And I mentioned 45K before, and when you start to kick around those circles and through my mate from Plinius and that sort of stuff, we're able to start quoting up jobs and that sort of stuff, and the money in the game just hang on, how long has this been going on? So from that, you took a bit of a leap of faith, and I don't know, it just definitely steamrolled from there.
Yeah, absolutely. How do you put it down to one big job that got you guys like really the momentum that you needed? You know, because I imagine it's quite a competitive industry, and you know, maybe historically quite a corrupt maybe industry, but like, what was it? Was there something that you guys did that got your foot in the door?
Yeah. So the corruptness was always interesting, because entering that the idea of cranes at that time was, you know, you had your Mick Gattos, you had the whoever else's in the industry, and you had the big bad union and all that sort of stuff. And for that, we just, I guess, again, just started from scratch and just worked our way into it. So it was interesting, because the BER program was going through, Kevin Rudd's stimulus program. So he was handing out jobs, he was building schools and all that sort of stuff. So those schools, we built many, many, many of them, and they're all nearly the same. So we're able to apply the same way of thinking with the rigging and that sort of stuff on these jobs, smash them up, make a bit of money. We weren't making squillions, we're just getting after it, so to speak. So we're all having a go, whether it was Maddie, myself, I had the Kiwis all rolled in there and that sort of stuff. And then between those schools and the Ararat prison, which wasn't all butterflies and rainbows, but there was that plus that, we just kept going until we sort of become something, and then we're able to keep leveraging off that or replicating it or scaling it.
It's good. Probably, you know, a really good model in some respects, having that the similarity of jobs to start with, so that the, I mean, I guess, you know, the brain power going into, you didn't have to change or re-engineer everything you were doing. An interesting little side note here, though. Like, I was working at the Ararat prison at the time when you guys were doing the expansion and having to drive from Ballarat each day. And I remember one day, like, I was driving, I was late for work, and the traffic's going about 40 k's an hour. And I'm like, what the fuck is going on here? And then I get up to what's holding traffic up, bloody Premier Cranes. I'm like, curse you, Stevie prick. But you know, and that was, you know, that's how visible it was in some respects.
But we did some tough yards absolutely. Like, it's out the middle of nowhere. So you talk about the competition. Well, there is no competition out there. So we're able to negotiate our way onto the project. Mm. The prisons have always been good to it because it's a cluster of work. It's all the same buildings. You can meet people. You can network with other trades. The trades are going through what you're going through. So that's where Maddie and I really shone through, in my opinion, and our people, is the guys were able to really solidify and work with each other, get the camaraderie going, and for that just paid dividends. So those guys, often those trades were from Melbourne, because how do you get those sort of trades in good old Ararat? Yeah. So those trades ended up going back to Melbourne, and we followed them back into town. So I guess there's a method in the madness somewhere. But there was snip of it at different times, but it was never straightforward. Business coach makes a joke now. You know, you call it bootstrapping. Bootstrapping, where you know, is that the right way to start a business? Probably not, but it is what it is, and it was what it was. So, fun and games.
And look, reputationally, I mean, I suppose it's like any interaction with anyone, whether it's big scale or small scale, you get one chance to really prove yourself with people. And it obviously sounds like you guys, you know, traverse those challenges and then build your reputation from there. And once your reputation's in, you continue to do a good job, then I guess you set yourself up and you get through that first 6 to 24 month barrier that usually breaks new businesses. And you got there. So we talked before about your business and the growth being kind of exponential since then, in terms of, you know, the numbers you were talking about at the start of the interview, the now versus back then with, you know, one or two crews and basically just all your mates working for you. Let's talk about your personal growth. You know, when you entered, you'd done a bit of work, you know, in terms of courses and short courses and things like that. What were your personal and professional values at that point in time like? Do you remember what it is that you stood for then?
Not much compared to now. Yeah. I definitely have to attest. So anything I did was either a bit of paper or was towards Premier in some way, thinking, righto, that might work. But I was hardly going out and getting high distinctions when I was doing those courses or anything like that. It was still going through the motions just to tick the box. So as far as personal development, there's probably not that much to attribute to those learnings. But all good. I guess the progression from that was really when we were at a point with Premier where we were so busy and everything was so busy, and Matt and I had built the businesses around ourselves. He was one, I was the other, and we had circles of guys around us. And you mentioned one or two crews. Well, then it's three and four, then it's five and six. And the amount of guys just circling into my world, just bang, 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 you know, going out and doing these projects on our behalf, wearing our shirts on our behalf, doing work on our behalf, managing our relationships on our behalf. Yeah. It was endless, you know, so you had to keep your finger on the pulse, had to work that way. So I guess back to the notion of personal development, I really felt, and I guess as a pinch point, you know, Sarah and I getting married and the kids starting to come along, I thought, oh, hang on, this isn't going to work. This isn't sustainable, having all these people, all these worlds just circling around and coming back to me. So that was our internal people, let alone our clients who also saw myself and Matt in his own way, but for the purpose of myself, it was circling around me. I think, this is not going to work long term. So the personal development started by that realization, going, I've got to squeeze here and find a different way. So
Yeah. Yep. And that was the beginning, I guess.
So, yeah, it sounds like those – the personal – well, the professional development certainly started to come on when, you know, things got real and the growth of the organisation got too great. I guess this is a good point to ask this question. You know, when things start out small, your ability to oversee and control most people and logistical factors is quite high. And as you said, as the business grew, your ability to control things lessens. How did you learn how to trust other people and relinquish control?
Not easily. So I guess with everything that you built up, there is a control freak that sits behind that, and you mentioned that at the start jokingly, but it's there, and it had to be there in a lot of ways. And you can laugh all you want, but it was endless, you know.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
The only way to control, like you're talking about, you know, men working. We're in a high risk game, so
absolutely.
I guess to do that, there was a number of things, and it probably comes back to a few books. So I really went after. I didn't necessarily get out the paper books. I really got into audio books, and audio books was like, hang on, how long has this been going on? So having never been a great reader or have the patience to sit down and read a book, to get audio books into my world was definitely a game changer, so to speak. So from that, I was pumping through the books. So some books I'd read over and over again, just trying to immerse myself in the content and try and figure it out. So I don't reckon there was any one moment where I had an aha moment, but it was consistent squeezing the brain or sort of infiltrating that critical faculty and getting into it and trying to find a different version of me. So leadership come into that, the totally refreshed way of thinking about business come into it, you know, the E-Myth point of view come into it, which is, you know, the way business should be, where business is designed to serve you, not the other way around. So you talk about the controlness is like, well, that's got to change. Everything's got to change. Whatever I thought was right with business, it was, you know, to use the word state breaker again, it's totally not starting again, but just going, something's got to give and something's got to be different. So that was a big shift for me personally. It was a massive shift for Premier, and even more so probably for my business partner Maddie, who was I guess you could say blindsided by where'd this come from, you know. And that wasn't that was probably more on me than him, you know what I mean, because I was just looking for something different. He was doing what we'd always done, and there's definitely no animosity for that, no. You know. So, fun and games.
Yeah. Well, in psychology, we talk about that neuroplasticity and how you have to rewire your thinking. And the only way to do that, it's a bit like losing a limb and having to learn another, you know, you have to create new pathways in your brain. And the only way to do that is to do it consistently, repetitively, and think repetitively in a different way. And it sounds like, for you, that's had to happen pretty quickly, which is, you know, a real credit to you. And definitely no judgment on wanting to still have tight control, because let's face it, Premier Cranes is Steve Wharton and Matt Clark, and it's your business brand, but it's your personal brand that goes with it. And so, yes, someone out there who's got a pair of gloves on and a tool in their hand are representing you, and you got to trust that person explicitly. So, you know, I can see how difficult that would be. Yeah.
So I guess to extend on your question before you go on is that back to that notion of E-Myth, what we did as part of that, I thought, I don't know, we can't do this. Like, I can read all the books I want, but actually applying it and finding a way through it is easier said than done. So I guess that's where we enlisted, and I got Maddie's buy-in to get a business coach. And I've been Googling around and searching around, and they're quite big over in the States, the notion of a business coach. And it all comes under that E-Myth way of thinking. And from that, I searched around. I actually talked to some people in the States, and that's not going to work. And a bit more Googling, a bit of LinkedIn, and I ended up finding someone that's based out of Adelaide. And that person was linked to all the same way of thinking that I'd read in a lot of the books, whether I'd read those books like Michael Gerber, the actual author in the States. He's got 30 plus whatever books, and I'd read most of them. And to find someone that actually had worked with Michael Gerber and was back in Australia, there's not many of them. Mm. So it was a rare, I guess, opportunity, but we took it. And from that, I guess that really gave us the confidence and the structure to go about changing and resetting everything that I sort of just described, because we had the guidance of a coach. He didn't know Matt and I personally, professionally, or anything. So he just had to apply his system of business and structure and all the learnings and topics and work us through that. And from that, we really started to, I guess, blossom out into a totally different business.
Yep. So who was that? Who was that you worked with?
Don Farnan. So Don Farnan's based in Adelaide, and he's still our business coach. And
that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, you as you said, there was no personal or professional connection to start with, so no emotional investment, you know, in terms of clouding his judgment or clouding his opinions or his ability to give feedback, which is really important. And, you know, obviously then
1 hour a week.
Yeah.
1 hour a week on Zoom. That's you know, so he doesn't know. Yep. He didn't know us from a bar of soap, and we didn't know him. So it was a leap of faith as far as that goes, and a leap of faith for me, let alone Maddie. So
But I mean, I guess that's the first moment of relinquishing control, isn't it? You're putting your ability to self reflect in someone else's hands, and it's an important one, because if he you know, excuse my language, but fucks it up, your ability to trust the next person is hampered. And that's the same in psychology, same for us. You know, someone goes to a poor psychologist, it ruins their experience with counseling, and they're potentially not going to do it again. So, you know, it sounds like for Don. Yeah, he obviously is really important in a massive way for you guys.
Just to add to that, excuse me, is I guess what it really did for us, and I guess it in a roundabout way it answers your question again, is it really made us think about the humane element of Premier. So the inside of our people's head, the way we had to treat our people, we had to think of our people, the way we had to think of ourselves. So I sent you some things the last few days, you know, from a bit of a personal exploratory process we went through, which he calls core purpose, and just to dig back and figure out the why and all that sort of stuff. And we did that for ourselves, and we did that for the business. So you're actually trying to work out, go through all those discussions we had with you to date in this conversation. Righto, who is Premier? Where did it come from? What's it about? What's good about it? What's not good about it? What's our values? What's our not our values, you know? And what should be our values? And so not only did we explore and lock down our core purposes, but we actually did what he would call is our strategic intent. So it's just a mix up of our mission, values, and all the strategic goals. And we got that plus that, and suddenly we've got a commitment to move forward. So
yeah, and you've also then got a basis for all of your employees in terms of what they need to aspire to, what they need to live in terms of their behaviours on site and whilst they're wearing a Premier Cranes, you know, kit. So yeah, it's a really good foundation for any good business, and you know, same with sports clubs as well, and anyone really. Like, you know, we talk about it with our even young people I work with. You know, what's your personal brand? What do you stand for? What do you want to be seen as? And and what do you, you know, you get to build it from now. So. I mean, massive amounts of stuff going on there. I mean, it's quite huge. And knowing you from back in the day to also knowing you, you know, now and seeing, like, just observing the professional growth, mate, like, it's phenomenal. And, like, you know, you've got to be proud, because I know there are a lot of people around you that are really proud.
I appreciate hearing that.
Yeah, no worries.
Muppet I was back then.
Mate, well, we're all Muppets. We still are sometimes, but... self-reflection then. I know it sounds like that process with Don started that real self-reflection. It can be quite challenging, can't it? And I guess attempting to confront what we believe are our own weaknesses ourselves is tough. But when we get our peers or our employees to do that, it can be even more challenging, because they're assessing us and giving us their opinion. What was your experience of the 360-degree feedback process?
Oh, no, I was ready for that. The 360 was probably harder for a lot of our other people, because some of the other, I guess, the the direct leadership analysis that we'd done on ourselves and Matt and I had done on each other and the like. Yeah. The 360 wasn't too bad. I think it showed up some made me more aware of some of my inherent traits, such as listening and those sort of things that shone through in that 360 review. But for our people, it was great because the guys that did have a go at it and take that feedback really, really pushed themselves to another level.
Yeah.
Our COO, she has gone leaps and bounds ahead from hearing a critique from that from her direct reports, from me, all that sort of stuff. So just seeing her, I guess the word awareness has got to come into it. Mm. So having that awareness, it didn't, in a lot of ways, they don't tell you anything you don't know. You probably just get smacked in the head with it. So for that, it's
yeah. I mean, you're spot on. You we're all kind of aware that. Yeah, I'm not so good at that, or yeah, this is my strength. And if you're not, then it's probably saying something about you as a person that you diligently go through life thinking that it's nothing a problem. And but yeah, no, it's really great.
We really want to bring We really want to bring candor into our world. So we want to be able to, if we're going to be a high performing team and we're going to have a level playing field or a decentralized structure where we're all pulling strings and making it happen rather than your command and control type way of thinking, then we've got to be able to call each other out. You've got to be able to have that sportsman-like candor where if it's not right, it's not right, or someone's not pulling their bit, they've got to know about it. So I'm happy to hear it. And if I'm not happy to hear about it, then why should anybody else listen or cop it, you know? So you're just making it a dictatorship if you're not.
Yeah, absolutely. Cop it. Absolutely. No, you are. And, I mean, you know, you've talked about, you know, your methods or your theories of leadership. And probably one I'm really strong on is that, you know, the ethical and the authentic and, you know, values-based leadership basically. So, you know, you can be as transformative as you want, but if you're not authentic in the way that you give and receive feedback, then no one else is going to either. So, you know, which is massive again. So it sounds like your development as a leader has really kicked off. And I know that identifies some things that people see are deficits in you. How did you deal with, those types of things?
What springs to mind is consistency and consistency and just getting after it. So each and every day, get up at the same time, get a lot of work done before anybody else is thinking about it and just do it again tomorrow and the next day and the next day. Mm-hmm. And any ill thoughts, feelings or otherwise, just get drowned out with that level of consistency and I guess not trying to overtake people or drown people out, but just doing my bit. So whether that I definitely changed my notion of leading by example doesn't work the way you think it does, and it doesn't work for everybody, and you have to learn that. Mm-hmm. And it's an unfortunate truth, because it'd be great if everybody just followed you the way you want them to follow you, but people don't work that way. Humans don't work that way, so everybody's different. You've got to find that little empowerment piece with each and every person. So
And for someone who I would probably have observed as, you know, introverted, particularly in like once you're outside of your core group of people, the benefit of that is that you can sit back and suss people out pretty well. But the downside is, you know, how do you communicate what you need? How do you do it without, you know, coming across as quiet and then demanding, you know, and how have you managed that? And do you agree with that?
Oh, communication is a terribly difficult thing. And I do agree with your comment regarding introvert, but at the same time, you just can't, you got to push yourself out. And for that, you think you're communicating at a level that needs to be, but it never is. And You think you've said it 3 times, 5 times, or in this way, in that way, in that way, but it's never it. So Don, our business coach, gave us some good lessons on communication, and it's a constant battle, and it's not them, it's you. Mm. So the sooner you realise that and just keep working at it and realise it's 100% you, 100% them. So if they're not listening, well, it's it, fair chance it's got something to do with your delivery.
And look, I'd be interested in the stats. I don't have them, but it'd be interesting to know all the people that Don's worked with, when they do that 360-degree feedback, how often is communication in the top five things that, you know, are seen as, you know, needs improvement? Because I'd imagine, you know, you could deliver a piece of information in five different ways and someone will still have an issue with, oh, I didn't receive that. And I remember that at the university, for example, it would be that, you know, we'd send an email, we'd do it in person, we'd do it in a meeting, we'd, you know, and then, oh, didn't know. And you think to yourself, fuck, how do you not know, mate? But that's, you know, that's part of the learning, isn't it? I'm not maybe speaking the right way or communicating that message. So, yeah, massive.
And then for me, it's structuring a business that people are able to actually communicate with each other. And if we're going with this decentralized structure where everybody's, it's our powers combined, we're systemized, so you do your bit, you know, left to right, this way, that way, this happens before that, et cetera, et cetera. Well, the communication, the cadence, the flow, all of those things plus some need to be there. And if we can't get that going, well, you just end up complicating things. You add frustration, you add blame to it. So it's a constant battle. That's our strive these days. That's where we're at the moment. We're looking for cadence. We're looking for flow. And for that removes blame, removes frustration, and then back to the humane bit, people start enjoying coming to work because it's easy and they can do it without the manic, I guess.
Yeah. And it sounds like they're being empowered, you know, taking a bit of responsibility for what their role is, which is great. That's, you know, a sign of a good culture. There's no doubt that personal drive is probably one of your key attributes. And, you know, knowing your family, probably everyone in every one of your siblings, or it's definitely the boys. How do you find balance in your life?
Get up early, get it done, and then make the time. I think I don't want to be that dad that's not around. I don't want to be that person, you know, that husband that's, you know, not present and all those sort of things. So I have empowered all these people around us. We've employed extra people. We've structured our business out, and now I just cut the cord. So do I stop thinking about it? No. But do I make myself available for my kids and my family? Absolutely. You know, so I do things that I know I have to. I can't make an excuse to get out of it. So my kids and I do jiu-jitsu, and for that I go with them to their classes two or three times a week. They snack on whatever they snack on the way there. They listen to some music. We have a bit of a bop together, and then they get after it on the mats, and then we talk about it on the way home. So that's awesome. That's how I find my release, and then I started to realize that they're going to beat me up, so I better start myself. So and same thing, that's my release now.
So a really healthy mindset around that balance, which is awesome. Hey, this is a tough one. You probably worked on this question with Don, I'd imagine. Define success as it stands for you.
Success, I reckon I'd have to draw back to my why, and that is that, and it starts with the people in our business, because if they're humming, then I'm humming, and then everything, you know, who you are at work is who you are at home, and all those cliche sayings and that sort of stuff. So having that place running the way it needs to run for myself, for them, for each other, et cetera, for their families, et cetera. So, but that having that level of, I'll use the word cadence again, having that in fruition, then I can have my life, and then I can go about my business, and it comes back to, so success would be freedom to choose. So I like to work hard, I like to get amongst it, I like to be a part of it, all that sort of stuff, but I want to be able to choose. So, you know, if I can't choose, if I have to make that choice to do something, if I have to make the choice because I don't get the choice to be a part of something to do with Premier in lieu of something to do with my family, that's when that's not successful to me. Yeah. So to be able to do that, and then I don't want to set up my people in the same way. Our people have got to have the same way of thinking. But it, that way of thinking isn't just a, I guess, an entitlement. They've got to work for it exactly the same way as I do. And that is, if they can push themselves in a way, whatever their way is, and they can represent it through the results that they push into the business, well, they get theirs, I get mine. That's success all round for me.
Awesome. That's good. I mean, it's a tough question, and obviously you've done some reflection on that, which is pretty cool because, you know, it's not about money, and you didn't mention money once there, which is, you know, for a lot of people, that can be a driver, and it's probably the wrong driver. So you've got a beautiful young family, you know, your kids are young now and, you know, growing exponentially as well as your business. And your partner, Sarah, she also possesses drive and her own, you know, has her own business. What are the compromises that you guys have both had to make to both allow to, you know, success to be achieved?
I think she's compromised more than me over the journey. Premier's been quite a beast where she's had most things in check, you know, being a clinic of sorts, she's able to go about her business in some kind of orderly way where Premier was just here, there and everywhere and here, there and everywhere, and I'll be home when I'm home and et cetera, et cetera. So the sacrifice, we're just there for each other, I reckon, would probably how I would paint it. Over our journey, we've known that we've had to manage kids' life and business, so to speak. So we just we try to communicate. I'm not, you know, that's probably where my failings start and the most with regard to communication. But she's got the nice blackboard, and I try to look at it at least once a week. Yep. So all fun and games. Sacrifices,
It's a tough question, isn't it? Well, obviously it works, and you're probably right. I mean, blokes, we're great at putting our own, you know, blinkers on at times and ploughing through, where I think our partners are probably much more flexible in terms of
the word I'd have to use is consistency. Is, again, I just try and be as consistent as I can. I try and, you know, historically I'd always be late for the airport, I'd be late for this, I'd be late for that. So I try and really refresh all those ways of thinking and you know, try and squeeze the brain to be totally different on all those fronts, so that it removes the anxiety out of it, both of our worlds, and we can enjoy each other's company when we're about each other, you know, and for our family's sake, for our kids' sake.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure your kids appreciate, you know, doing jiu-jitsu together and seeing dad, you know, get thrown around a bit as well. And, you know, there's that shared kind of experience, isn't there, which is great. Last couple of questions, mate. Fear. Like, what role does fear play in, you know, that fear of, you know, we talked about success and what success means, but are there fears that drive you as well? Or have they driven you?
The fear gets drowned out by having done my homework now. I feel that you can dispel any fear by knowing that you've done the work and that you just got to stick at it and stick at it and stick at it and stick at it. So is there doubt? Yep. There's definitely doubt. And is there fear? Oh, I'm not that fearful. So you doubt things because of the doubt others bring into your world. So I don't like the doubters and I don't like the haters, so to speak. But there is times where they go, "Oh, I told you so," or this and that, and I use the word unwavering. I always try and be unwavering with my thing, and sometimes that might come across quite arrogant or whatever. But I guess if we keep pushing at it, it does start to shine through. We've all gone through COVID over the last 18, 20 months. You know, that we didn't look at that as a negative once. So we didn't see the fear in that. You know, we definitely had our discussions about it from a business point of view, but fear wasn't it. You know, we weren't fearful. We just like, righto, we need to go about this and you know, whether it's JobKeeper or whatever. So JobKeeper to us enabled the shift in business way of thinking in our world. Yeah. So we were able to, I guess, spend that money to actually to get our people to think and act the way we wanted them to act. So, no, fear's not worried about it.
Yeah, not worried about it. Good man. stepping back into my own business in the next, well, from tomorrow, you know, probably grappling with that a bit at the moment. But, I guess what I've found from our conversation today is it's actually, you know, it's quite inspirational what you've been able to achieve and what you've done. Yes, you know, 20 odd Cranes is brilliant, but I reckon more so what you've done for yourself and your family in terms of, I'd say you're a better person than you were 10 years ago, like deep down, driven by much more positive things, and that's pretty awesome, mate. That's actually quite, inspirational.
Now, again, mate, I appreciate hearing that, but
you don't have to say
it. No, it's fine. And I think, yeah, to throw it back to you.
So, last question.
No, I think to throw it back to yourself and what you're stepping into tomorrow is, like, it is one day at a time, and whatever you do today for tomorrow, if you go into every day just getting after it in that way, it all adds up. And once it's added up, suddenly it's something tangible. And that's what Premier's become to us. It's something tangible. Mm. It's like, hang on, this is its own entity. This is its own thing. It's no longer, it's bigger than Matt and Steve now. So, and that, how great's that, you know? It's great for our people. Yeah. It's great for our clients, yeah, everything, you know? So you want your business to be that. Of course it's going to be a piece of you, but the sooner it's not about you, the better, in my opinion. Mm. So, you've got it. One man band, three man band, 50 man band. Like it's all fun and games.
That's it. Absolutely, mate. So last question then, what's next? Keep going on the path, keep staying consistent, or have you got some grand plan up your sleeve?
I think we're built to scale now. So we're built to scale. So we're built to systemize our business, to add layers into our world. So for that, I'm driven to be a great part of that, to guide our people, to see them, get their creative parts of their thinking, going. And with that, you can see our powers combined really start to shine through. So no longer it's about, you know, myself and Matt and our vision or whatever. It's suddenly it's a shared vision, and suddenly bring in these good people, these good experts, and they start throwing their two bobs around, starting to add their ways of thinking into our world, and we grow and change and adapt and take on the other players in the industry in ways that others can't. The others are all people centric. They're all got their key people, et cetera. For us, if we can get all our key people are our people, then we're kicking goals, and I guess that's what we'd call team lifting. So it's fun and games.
Yep. Yeah, awesome. So, yeah, keep going how you're going. I mean, you've got plenty of years left, so see how big the empire can be. You know, you'll be like that old man that can drive around with his great-grandkids or grandkids one day, driving through Melbourne going, I built that. See this tunnel, kids? I helped build this. And that's a pretty good legacy. Oh,
yeah, no, happy to be a part of it, for sure.
Yeah, good stuff. All right, mate. Well, look, this has been a fantastic chat. Really appreciate your time today, and all the very best for the future.
Appreciate your time. Thanks, mate.
No doubt that Steve's story has many more chapters to go, and it would take a brave person to bet against him. We'd like to thank Steve for his valuable time and wish him all the best for the future. We're going to take an extended break from recording the podcast, but we'll be back in the future with more episodes of A Dive Into the Mind. Until next time, enjoy. It is with great pride that I promote my own business, Three Lions Psychology and Consulting. It is my mission to provide professional consultancy services to businesses, organisations, schools or clubs with a range of tailored programs and services, including a focus on developing emerging leaders, building individual and organisational resilience, or even educating organisations to develop a better understanding of mental health issues. Check out the website threelionspc.com.au and take a look at the range of programs available. Or, if you want something more specific, I also develop bespoke programs to suit your needs. So if you want to invest in your staff or people, get in touch. I cannot wait to work with you. As always, a massive thanks to independent band These Things, who have kindly provided the music featured in this podcast. You can stream their latest album, Existential Hangover, on Spotify, or even better, buy their album by heading to their Facebook page and following the links. Last but definitely not least, a massive thanks to John Valentin, our production man here at A Dive Into the Mind. The work he does to get these episodes prepped and prepared and produced is immense, and we could not do it without him. So thanks again, John.